The following episode of The Drop-In is brought to you by Spoke, a new free listening app from SiriusXM.
The following is an at-will presentation.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Drop-In with Will Melnati.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode 7 of The Drop-In. Welcome back. Every episode, I take you through some things that annoyed me throughout the week. I'm sure you've heard them. This past weekend, I was lucky enough to go to Jamaica for a few days and clear my head. So after some time out there with the mon, everyone out there calls each other mon. They even call the women mon. Anyway, I started thinking about all the things that don't annoy me. So here's a new segment called Things That Don't Annoy Will, Summer Edition. Mitch is going to put 60 seconds on the clock, and here we go. Getting upgraded on an airplane. Look, traveling sucks. Airplanes suck. Everyone breathing each other's air sucks. But getting upgraded when you're not expecting it, makes it not so bad. Cold beer in the summer. Look, I know this sounds cliche, but during the summer, I could actually start drinking cold beer the minute I wake up and not stop until the sun goes down. Does that make me a weirdo? Maybe. An alcoholic? Not even close. I'm not annoyed with a pair of shorter than normal swim trunks. Oh, I bought a pair of these guys, not a Speedo, because that's just ridiculous looking, but a nice length above the knees. Are you okay with that? Do you hate me for it? Am I too European? No problem, man. Game of Thrones. I hate even talking about it because I feel like I sound like every other annoying person, but this season is just getting good, okay? And it's just as it's ending, of course. I think this might be the only real thing bringing Americans together these days. And we're done. See, I kept it pretty light. If you don't know my guest's name, you certainly know his work. He co-wrote movies like Road Trip, Old School, and The Hangover Part 2. He created a new series on Showtime called Dice, which is in its second season. Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Armstrong. I'm really excited to have you here.
And happy to be here.
One thing I like to do with guests is we make sure that they're from Chicago. That's an important part because I am too.
All right.
And so
I qualify.
Yeah, you qualify. You checked that box off, which was important for me. But you have Chicago roots and
grew up in Wheaton. In the suburbs, and
love it.
And then went to Wheaton North High School, went to Bradley University in Peoria, Illinois.
Yeah, I know. Then, I know all these things.
I zigzagged around the country and came back to Chicago, and I lived in, Bucktown before it was the most popular place in the world. We're in an advertising agency right now. Should I say? Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah,
we're in the
of
middle
course.
Of like, we're podcasting and looking out at an advertising. I used to work in advertising in Chicago.
Yeah, but I noticed that when you actually talk about it, you never say the name of it.
I just did.
What is it?
Hal Ryan. Did I just say it or just
no,
think it?
Oh my God. It.
I thought it. I can't remember what I'm saying.
What is it
Hal
called?
Hal Ryan and Partners.
Okay. Are they still around?
I don't know. I think they got bought by some French company.
Okay.
But it was an awesome place to work. It was a good, when you're like, I was 24 and I got to like invent things that might be on TV. It was incredible.
That's
I learned
amazing.
A lot working on radio commercials and writing and, it was really my dream as a kid to just get paid to invent stuff, like invent funny stuff, whether it's funny or whatever. I just wanted to write for a living and sit around with other smart, funny people and invent things. It was basically like, I'm still doing that, luckily, to this day, but it started out doing radio ads for Kinko's or whatever, And it was – I loved it.
I think it's – I mean, I'm actually kind of surprised to hear that at 24 that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I was – well, I when I was in high school – we had a guy come into my high school and he was like, or what do you call it? The career day?
Sure.
There's a guy from an advertising agency in Chicago. And I was just like, oh man, I was listening to what he was saying. And I was like, wait, you just sit around and think of ideas. And like, so
Sign
as a sophomore, I was like, that was the first thing that made any sense to me. Cause I really wasn't, I wasn't really detail oriented with school and stuff, but I had like a weird creative brain. I could tell her, at that time. And I was like, I finally found a place that made sense. So I really focused on. So my point being, I was so focused on doing that around age 24 or whatever, I was actually I lucked out and got to do it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you remember your first big idea that you had?
I think it was probably when I was like, I used to draw cartoons all the time. Like I used to imitate like the Far Side.
Sure.
And imitate things like that. And I think that like my whole family, like my grandparents, everybody thought it was so funny. They would pass it around. I think that was probably the first time I was like, oh man, I can do, and I could see the genuine laughter. They weren't, you know, the difference between a laugh and like a fake
laugh. A pity
laugh. Yeah, it was real. So that I remember being like, yeah, I feel like I can, I might have a spatial, funny comedy visual ability or whatever. Yeah. So that's when I first started out.
That's great. By the way, I took Second City. So in that mix. I know you did that, which is.
Yeah. I mean, I did do Second City training, but I mostly Improv Olympic was really more influential on me. Like I did like stuff with Del Close and people there. And when I was there, it was like a great time for that theater. But yeah, so you know.
The best.
Yeah, so fun.
Because it's helpful also in other aspects of your life. I think confidence-wise and you know, for me it was eye-opening in that, you know, wow, I really have to figure out how to think fast and how to, you know, think on my feet and all that stuff.
Well, it could be bad. You know, when you watch it, it could be bad. So you got to it's good that we trained for a long time. Like before there were cell phones and before there were audiences really packing the house. Like I feel bad for the students now at UCB. They're like, or Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York and LA where I perform. It's, you know, they practice for a while and then all of a sudden they're like thrown on stage and like they're not that good yet and they're desperate and they're pressing and they're not. When I was studying way back, now that I'm an old man.
He doesn't look it, guys.
We were, but you know, we were able to like sort of be artsy fartsy and like trust each other and really listen. And you could still do that, but it's just, you know, you got to do it faster now. So back then, you know, there's no real judgment. We would do like a 7-minute long 2-person scene at the beginning of our Herald or whatever, you know, and Del Close would complain that we were going too fast, you know, or whatever. So it was good to practice and, you know, really slow down and find your voice and learn how to listen and react and be natural and then find your, you know, comic acting ability in that way and then find the voice of your team together as a group mind or whatever. And then you got to start going. At some point, you got to be super funny. So, you know, then you can start turning on the jets a little bit and go for it. And that's what happened when I was at UCB in New York. Some of the shows, you know, we were actually on stage doing good shows and that was fun.
Yeah, do you think the speed of this, putting people up on stage before they're ready, do you think that actually works counteractively where they say, oh, man, I suck. I'm not going to do this anymore?
Yeah, I'm sure. But worse than that, like I'm not as worried about people that quit. I'm more worried about people that get into bad habits. You know what I mean? Like if you have big talent, you're probably never going to quit, right? You know, or you might go into stand-up or something else. But to do, you know, it's a cool art form, and it's a different kind of laugh you get in a cool long form improv show.
Absolutely.
If it's done right, you know, or if it's just done well, it's the coolest thing, you know. And if it's done bad, it's the worst thing. You want to get out of there.
It's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I've been lucky to be with like I do soundtrack now in LA on Friday nights still, and I feel like it, you know. First of all, I just feel like I can rely on all the people in the show I've been performing with forever. And that's just such a gift. It's incredible. Like, I know how lucky I am. You know, I try not to miss any of the shows because I know how lucky I am to be able to do them. And then I feel like it helps my – it definitely helps my writing, helps when I'm directing, helps when I'm working with actors, helps when I'm thinking of stuff. You know, it just makes you sort of, like, quick – and keeps you kind of fresh or whatever. And then I think that writing also helps your, you know, when I'm writing a screenplay or something, it helps me in performing. So I have this other skill
sure.
that I bring to it or whatever.
I mean, there has to be, though, the days that you're like, oh, this seems like not the thing I want to be doing right now.
When I'm going over there?
Yeah.
Or in it?
Both.
It's not like that. Never happened.
So, okay.
Sometimes I'm
that.
Like, oh, man, I'm tired.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I want
sure.
to take a nap or whatever. Yeah, I've been tired, but, like,
but you're not
I've
nervous.
Never been. No.
That's not part of it anymore.
I would say, like, out of all the people in any of the shows I've ever done, I'm probably the most nervous out of all my, you know, and I'm still not really nervous. No one is really nervous, but you realize that, and it took me a long time to get there, but you realize that you got to be okay with bombing before you start. Like, if the worst thing, like, imagine, like, this is a good advice for anybody that's, like, trying something new. Imagine really the reality of what would happen if the worst possible thing happened. Like, if I went on stage or if I was in this podcast and I literally lost my train of thought, I couldn't remember the actors from the show, I couldn't, you know, it's, what's the worst? It's not, I mean, it's bad, but it's not.
Right.
Like, they can't come over to your house and kill you because you did that. Or, right. You know what I mean? The audience is going to be, it is an improvisational show. You have other people who are going to save you, probably. And it's just not that bad. So, like, the risk, you know, you don't, you know, there's a net. You don't fall off the tightrope and die, you know. So it's just not, the stakes aren't as high as you think they are when you go out there. So if you can just accept that, then you're free.
Yeah.
And then you can really be in the moment and listen and.
Well, I think that goes for everything in life for the most part, you know.
It took me a bit. It's easier said than done.
Of course.
You still get nervous.
Of course. You can sit here and say, like, look, you know, it's not a big deal. Don't worry. When you're in it, it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I did stand up for the first time, and I talked about it on this podcast. I played a piece of us, like, trying to write some stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's just grinding. Like, stand-up is a whole different art form. You're saying the same stuff. No. I don't. Well, I think I was trying to figure out why I never tried it. I mean,
let's break it down. Let's figure it out.
Well, I think it's because I don't want to say the same stuff again.
Yeah.
Which is really basic to say. And, like, you know, it's kind of a cop-out. It's a totally different art form. Like, someone that wants to, like, refine, and just get it down to where they can just, like, push that button and make people laugh. That, I mean, I would love to have a set done and go do it, but I don't want to, like, you know, it's just like I'm more interested in, like, I would rather write a screenplay or a story or shoot something or improvise and then just have it go away.
For you, what's the hardest part of the screenwriting process?
Just committing to write a movie. You know what I mean? Just be like, because I know once you get into it, it's going to take a year or whatever. So it's like, you know, like, is this really a movie? You know, is this really gonna work?
And have you had moments where you've been almost kind of done, I guess, done in quotations, and you felt like this
that's the worst. You gotta find put a movie into your movie. You know what I mean? Then you gotta sit there and go, like, well, this isn't a movie, is it? So we gotta, how do we put a movie into this movie? You know what I mean?
right.
You know, whatever. It sounds dumb to say it that way, but, you know, sometimes, you know, if you don't have that big, a great story that's interesting the whole way through, and obviously it's silly for me to say because I write some, like, ridiculous movies, but even the silliest movies, the dumbest movies, have, like, a real motor to them, the ones that work. And so to have something that just naturally has a motor, that doesn't feel desperate, that does go, that does move, and you feel like you care about the characters in all these different ways, and they're making decisions that are surprising you and all these things, you know, I always have, like, a bunch of ideas sort of. Like, I have, like, 10 ideas right now that aren't quite movies.
Let's hear them.
You know what I mean?
No, number one.
No way. You want to know it's a movie. And then sometimes you start breaking out, like, oh, it's a movie. And then you realize after, like, 4 days it's still not a movie, you know, and then you put it back. So, you know, once you – I do feel like once I commit to something, I could figure it out.
Right.
I do have, like, confidence in that way. But I know how much work it is to make it, like, a finished, tight script. You know, there's so many different drafts you do.
Sure.
You know, forever.
How much can you rely on the cast to if you think something's pretty good, how much can you rely on the cast to actually make it, see it through to the end of funny?
I think zero.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting answer.
But obviously you need Will Ferrell to take it there, or you need Bill Murray to take it there, or you know, whoever you have. But it should be jumping on the page, so to speak. You know, it should be rocking, and they should be able to see it and, like, oh, I got this. This is funny. You know what I mean? Or this is going to work. I understand this. You don't ever want to have it, like, I would say you don't want to leave anything, like, even on the Dice show that I'm.
Yeah.
It's like we definitely improvise a little bit, but it's tight on the page. You know, you don't want to go in there and be like, oh, we don't know.
Yeah, just do something with this. No, maybe it'll.
I mean, that's what some people ask me about, like, well, don't they improvise a lot? And the answer is yeah, but usually you're improvising
on top of something that's
already
funny.
Well, you're doing a different version of what was already there, or you're putting in different words, or you're doing a turn of phrase. It's still a funny – usually the scene's usually a funny idea already. You know what I mean? Hopefully.
Is there a scene that you remember that is like the funniest scene that you feel like you've ever written? You remember like not, you know, uncontrollably laughing while you were writing it and thinking this is going to just –
Well, I remember that's a funny question. I mean, it sounds like I feel like kind of a dick, like answering that, like, this is the funniest scene ever.
No, come
but
on.
That scene where Will Ferrell shoots himself in the neck and
oh, my
school.
God.
It's like – but
go, please.
But whatever. No, but I it's one of those things where you're like, you know – like when me and Todd and I – Todd Phillips and I wrote that movie together, a lot of movies together, and he directed it. And I remember us brainstorming over coffee. You know, we're like we used to sit at breakfast and like map out stuff on legal pads and just thought. And I remember when we thought of it, you know, or me like kind of like explaining how it would go down and build, and we're building on it with each other. I remember us just being like, "That's pretty good. You know, that's gonna be good."
Can
you
I
know?
Tell you?
And then just like it never. You know, that's a good sign too. And it's like, oh, you don't need to change it that much. Like that's pretty. That sequence of events is like always gonna work. You know, and I remember going to. It was a test screening, and we really wanted to use that song from The Graduate, but it was like tons of money. It was so expensive. But then like one of the executives was like, we're buying that song. You know what I mean? Because it was like, you know, it's like the movie wasn't released yet, you know? So it's like, you know, it's good. You know, it's working.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Now, was the choice in that scene to make the voice slow down as it happened, to make Will Ferrell's voice slow down as he was, you know, tranquilized? Was that part of the script, or developed?
I think that was
post?
Probably from Todd Phillips, yeah. You know, the director. It's probably like he's probably sitting there thinking about how is he really going to shoot this scene, how it's really going to go once he's affected, and like maybe, you know, I think he put in like, oh, maybe we'll. But I don't know the answer to that one. I think that I know I was there. We just filmed it normal.
You sure,
know?
Of course.
Yeah. So.
Well, all I have to say is that scene, it's funny that you said that and I hadn't thought of it for a while, but that scene, I remember exactly where I was sitting in the movie theater, and I remember watching that scene and I was uncontrollably laughing to the point where, like, I never do that in a theater. I don't remember the last time I have since that, seriously, that scene. And anytime I watched it, I swear on my life, I'm not making that up.
All right.
And I'm not blowing smoke either. You already told me that was the one. And I'm telling you, look, I agree. And I haven't.
Great. This is great news.
I know. It's really good news. Thank you. Today, we have a new segment called What the Frat? In honor of Scott Armstrong, Old School, and Back to School Week, we're going to talk to some people anonymously about their fraternity glory days.
Well, I could tell you about the time I drank a goldfish or cups of schmegma, but that was just leaving emotional scars. I want to tell you about a physical scar when one of my pledge brothers had his ass cheek out and was supposed to get hit with a cold fork to scare him, but some drunk brother got a piping hot fork and literally branded his ass cheek with a hot fork. And to this day, he's got four prongs across his ass, which we constantly remind him about.
Man, I remember this thing so well. There was this kid who I saw, and there was this sort of race set up between two kids. One had to drink 2 gallons of milk, which he succeeded in doing in under 2 minutes. The other, 2 gallons of lemonade. I believe he got 1.5 down. They then hopped into 2 motorized shopping carts, raced them around a room covered in baby oil, and let's just say the race didn't end cleanly, but there was a winner at the end. And if you didn't win, if you didn't put any points on the board and you didn't score, you had to then run around campus completely naked in a loop for not only all of your fellow frat members to see, but for several of the sororities to get a glimpse of real manhood looks like in the middle of the winter.
My frat at the time, they said, hey, we're going to take you out to breakfast. We just stuffed our faces all morning. So then after that, they brought us back to the house because we were going to go play football. And they're like, all right, guys, get in line. And we're like, what do you mean get in line? They're like, get in line. We're playing our version of football today. So they're like, all right, you have to drink 5 beers in order to get a touchdown. Once we pound our 4th beer, they didn't hand us the 5th beer. They're like, all right, follow the brother with the football, and you'll get your 5th beer. And we're like, all right, what does this mean? So, of course, they give the football to the fastest, most interested brother at the time. He starts sprinting down the street. So we chase him. Basically, what they're doing is they bring us to every sorority's house. And at every sorority's house, all the chicks are standing outside with beers waiting for us. And we get to the house, and they all hand us the beers. And, of course, they give us 4 beers. Never get that 5th beer. Now, the whole time, we're throwing up everywhere in front of hot chicks' feet, all up and down the street. And apparently, the whole city knows my fraternity does this. Everyone's coming out and cheering us on, running down Main Street. Everyone's cheering us on. I'm throwing up all over the street. It's very embarrassing. And, of course, we finally get back to the house after a good 2 hours of this, and they give us our final beer, which is like a beer that they pretty much warmed up in the microwave, and we finally got our touchdown, quote-unquote.
That one time in college when my buddy threw up a street sign, and I woke up the next day with 22 staples to the head. But that other time when I challenged a linebacker in a beer-chugging contest, and I fell down a flight of stairs, hitting every single stair.
Wow, super fratty. And now, back to our show. Guys, have you heard of Spoke? It is a new app that curates playlists for you of podcasts that you like based on the things that you want to hear. These days, there's so many podcasts, it's hard to find exactly what you want to listen to. Spoke makes that easy for you. Go to hearspoke.com/atwill and start putting in your preferences. From there, you will be directed to a path that highlights all different types of podcasts surrounding what you like. Not only that, but they have highlights from the drop-in. Go to hearspoke.com/atwill, and they have the highlights from each episode, the best portions of the show, and all the other shows from the At Will Network. If you like what you hear, you can join the conversation and leave a voice comment or send it to a friend on social media. That's right, hearspoke.com/atwill. Check it out now. Talk to me about dice. I want to hear kind of how that happened. What was your relationship like with Andrew Dice Clay, for anyone who hasn't, watched comedy ever? Andrew Dice Clay is a legendary comedian who, you know, his own path has been ups and downs, and he's hated and he's loved and he's revered. And, you know, I'm just interested to know how that kind of project came about, and how long have you known him?
I haven't known him that long. He was, you know, my agent mentioned, like, hey, do you want to meet with Andrew Dice Clay? He wants to do like some kind of cable show. And I was like, I'll meet with Dice. Yeah, I saw Blue Jasmine, and he was so great in that Woody Allen movie as an actor. And I knew that he is capable of more than just what he does on stage as a stand-up. So I was interested just to see what he had to say. And then when he came in, it was just like obvious this is a guy that like invented this giant persona that you know, the whole show really, like, that came to me when I was meeting with him is like, you know, it's so interesting, this, like, this guy Andrew Silverstein invented this character of the Dice Man, but then the Dice Man became sort of, you know, this is something he does on stage. He puts on the leather jacket and the cigarette and the sunglasses, and he, like, it's just like a shocking, outrageous comic. He's funny as hell, but he's also like a person after that. But he's also got a little confused because he's kind of still a little bit of Dice in real life, but he's also his real self. But then it got confusing for me, and it made me really interested. Like, I want to do a show about this guy that's stuck in the skin of the Dice Man.
We actually have a clip from Dice. Let's take a listen.
Hey, Dice.
Hey. Carmen, did you ever meet David Arquette?
Hi. Hey, listen. I'm opening this new club in Naples, Florida. Uh-huh. And if you want to invest, I can get you on the ground level. It's going to be a hot club.
Yeah, I know. Not a club. I know. How about I bang your head in with a club? How does that sound, David? Do you not see I'm sitting here with my lady? What are you, an asshole?
Sorry, Dice.
Walk away.
I was trying to...
Walk away.
Sorry, Carmen.
What is wrong with you? You yelled at him for no reason.
No. I got my reasons.
You always have your reasons.
Can you tell listeners, like, what's the craziest thing that Andrew Dice Clay has done or said that you remember?
I don't even know where to start. I mean, like, even in the meeting, he was like, well, I lost all my money, divorces and gambling. So he went to Vegas to be a professional gambler. Then he won $1 million. and then he bought four cars, and he lost $1 million, and he was just broke and just had four cars in Vegas. And then, you know, but he'll text me like, oh, I just got in a fist fight in Rite Aid with an old man. We should put this in the show or whatever. You know,
you're like, wait, what? Call
yeah,
me.
Yeah,
are
exactly.
you okay?
No, that's what
it's
the
like
manager's
just a
for.
Regular yeah. Monday.
Well, his life is weird because he's so famous, but he also isn't famous at the same time. He's very, very, very famous with certain people. And then he's also like not that well known with some other people, but the people that know him feel like they have direct access to him. They feel like they could walk up to him. He should be cool with them all the time.
And be the dice man.
And he should be the dice man to try
like,
and do
hey.
It. But which he, you know, likes sometimes, sometimes he doesn't. You know, so he also, and then he's in his own head, like trying to save his energy to do whatever he's doing. He's going to go do a show or he's going to, you know, people don't understand. He's busy doing whatever it is. And he just get, you know, so he can get prickly. But he's a great actor, great comic actor. He's great to work with, you know, to work on the show. We'll basically like go to dinner and talk about ideas, and then we'll like I'll go over to his house, we'll talk about more ideas, and then he'll come to the writer's room and talk about ideas. He'll text me crazy stuff that's happening in his life, like what just happened, you know. and then we'll invent stuff in the writer's room, stuff that sounds like what would happen. This is the kind of thing that would happen to Dice. And then we'll invent big stories like Mickey Rourke, you know, and him having like a suicide pact that they agree to never get old together. So Mickey Rourke shows up and says like, oh, we're gonna die on Thursday, and Dice's like, I don't remember ever saying that, you know. Big ideas like that is gonna be in the season this year. And then we sort of weave it all together into a giant seat, and we do a true writing room where we invent this whole thing. I think we do a good job of writing in his voice. That was the one thing, like I felt like I knew I could write in Dice's voice, you know, where it's kind of like he's kind of got a gangster thing going, but he's kind of like wicked smart. Like he has street smarts, but then he's also like a little bit like he can be a dummy too, which he'll admit. And it's just like his TV personality that you really, if you invented it from thin air, it would be kind of like fake. And the fact that it's real makes it kind of great to write. It's a great TV character.
And did you find that people were hesitant to bite on a project like this from a network standpoint?
We only took it to like three places and got three offers. So, what did help, I would say, is that we got a little money from Fox 21. Sean and Brian first, the producers, and the first kind of came to me with it. And we shot this sort of 9-minute little short film with Natasha Leggero in it, who's from the very beginning awesome in the show. I cast her just because I knew she'd be great. No auditioning process. Just gave her the part.
Not needed.
Yeah, Dyson never even met her. And then it was just
what?
Like,
oh. Well, they I mean, had
just for this little short. Well, I think they had met like at the Comedy Store or something.
I was gonna say
he
that's
didn't remember.
Ridiculous.
You know what I mean? He doesn't know. And then, but yeah, she's a big stand-up in her own right. Great comic. She has her own show on Comedy Central. Super smart showrunner herself. But you know, she was willing to come in and just sort of bring the show to life. And it's hard to hang with Dice sometimes because he's such a overpowering yeah. presence in the scene. And she just like she's like a sniper. She just gives it back to him. You know, just like undercuts him, gives it back to him, has like these wicked deadpan looks when he needs one.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically like calls him on it when he's acting ridiculous or when he's crosses the line. And she's not afraid to cross the line either. She's not just there as a yeah. referee. She's super funny and, like, giving him shit.
A lot of your films, you know, have this kind of bro mentality. I hate to call it that because that's not really what it is.
I know. It's so out of fashion now.
How do you describe it? How do you describe, like, the genre? Because people call it different things, but what do you actually call it? And then I have a follow-up question once you answer.
You know, I don't call it anything. I just, you know, it's like
fun.
It's supposed to be about, yeah, I call it fun.
Yeah.
We just,
that's
call
good
it
enough.
Fun. No, I just feel like it's I like just to explore the friendship that guys have with each other. That's what makes me laugh. It has nothing to do with like being a bro or whatever the term is, or it's more about like the realities of friendship. There's different stages of guys' lives and each one's pretty funny. Like in high school, there's something funny about that. If there's three guys that are friends, or there's three guys in college, and then when they graduate, they don't see each other as much anymore, but they still hang out. They got new friends, and they're evolving, and then they get
wives,
they might be getting
and
married.
Kids,
and they, yeah, and they're yeah. still trying to keep in touch, and then they like lose themselves. Every stage of like guys get, I mean, every, you could say it about any person,
right.
you know, I just kind of stumbled into it and just kept making people laugh with it. I don't know.
But so did you have a reference?
I mean, it was
that?
Me and Todd Phillips, you know, originally.
Yeah, of course.
So
did you have a group of guys and do you still that you can reference in when you're writing these characters?
I mean, I do, but I would probably say that some of it comes from Todd and I's jealousy of other people's groups of friends. Honestly, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of
like
course.
We kind of wish we had that group. I think we could have that group, but then we're like, oh, I don't really want to hang out with those guys. I'll see, you know what I mean?
So Matt Walsh is your co-host on a new podcast that is called the UCB Arts
UCB Sports and Leisure. Yeah.
Okay, and people are calling it the best Chicago Bears podcast ever.
Well, what happened? We started out is just like, man, we like the Bears.
We should talk
Chicago
about
Bears.
Them.
And then we started a podcast. Then we're like, no one's listening. Like, why are we doing anything about the Bears? But it was still super funny. But it was kind of like not named right. So then we rebooted it, and now we're like, now we call it UCB Sports and Leisure, which is it's basically just. Us interviewing our friends that are playing great characters. It has nothing. It's mostly. It could literally be about anything. It's mostly about like leisure or what you know.
It's a. By the way,
we've had great guests.
Yes, it's a. They've had incredible fake guests.
Yeah, they're all playing fake people.
But they're hilarious because you're actually imagining that person sitting with them in the studio and having a ridiculous conversation.
It gets kind of like. Surreal where you when you're in it you kind of think you're dreaming for a minute because it gets really
well especially
strange.
For audio it's perfect because
yeah,
like you're
hopefully.
Just with your mind's eye I'm like picturing who was that Kelsey Grammer in the room or something.
Yeah, that was John Daly.
So ridiculous.
Kelsey Grammer.
So ridiculous. Okay, so you're doing the podcast. Do you feel like a changed man now that you have a podcast? Are you embracing the industry? Is your life totally different now that you're a podcast
host?
No,
everything's seriously the exact same. I just really fun to do with Matt. It's like the same thing as performing it in soundtrack at the UCB Theater. It's like just something that it's a blast to do.
Yeah,
and like I'm not really trying to get anything else out of it. But
yeah,
it really is like a chance to like see your great friends and perform in a way. I just feel so lucky to be able to do it.
Totally.
And Matt's so funny. Like I feel like we have a good. Whatever vibe when we interview people for fun. Like, it's just ridiculous. So, and it's fun to invent stuff with them and text them ideas. And it's just it's more of like a side
it's a hobby.
Thing. It's a hobby. You know,
it's
not a real, you on the other hand, this is not a hobby.
This is not
a
hobby.
Deal.
This is a real deal.
Yeah.
But I will say, please go listen to this podcast of his. It's really great. I got a chance
you
to listen to
it. You know, when something's a hobby, it's worth checking out.
That's right.
That's the big sell.
That's true. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be. Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at ScottArmstrong22. You can follow us.
That's with one T, ladies
and
gentlemen.
Or at UCB Sports and Leisure.
Okay.
At UCBSL, I guess it is.
Okay. Season 2 of Dice.
It's on Showtime this week. And you can actually go to the website now and check out the first season or first episode.
Guys, there you go. Go check it out and check out the podcast. And Scott, we'll see you next time.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much to my guest, Scott Armstrong. If you want to follow him on Twitter, he is at ScottArmstrong22. That's with one T in the Scott. Tune in to Showtime's Dice. Thank you so much for listening to The Drop-In. If you listen to our other show called The Love Bomb, with Nico Tortorella. Check him out on yesterday's episode of Modern Love from the New York Times. We also just decided on a launch date for the brand new amazing podcast from Jenna Ushkowitz. Stay tuned for that coming out this fall. Remember to follow At Will Radio on Instagram and take 5 seconds to leave a review on the Apple Podcasts app. Join us next week for a brand new episode. Have a good one. Thanks again to our partner, Spoke, SiriusXM's new app that allows you to listen to podcasts, radio programs, and documentaries curated for you. Go to hearspoke.com/at will now.